grind.
Alright, where are you going? Here, okay?
Grind.
Oh my god.
Not coming in, I figured it, man.
Good job, buddy. The Hunt for Answers. The Ugly Pike Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Ugly Pike Podcast on the Outdoor Journal Radio Podcast Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Canada's only specialized pike and muskie shop, Izoco. Head over to izocofishing.com and check out all the amazing hand-picked, top-quality gear they have to offer. This episode is also proudly brought to you by Angling Sports, based in London, Ontario, and serving customers throughout Canada and the northern U.S. With over 30 years of unmatched angler support, they offer top-tier fishing products catering to every skill level. Explore their offerings at anglingsports.ca and gear up for an unparalleled fishing experience. So before delving into the second part of our discussion with Marlon Prince about muskie fishing in New Brunswick, be sure to go and download episode 163, part one, and catch up. Join us now as we continue our conversation and explore some transformative shifts in the New Brunswick sport fishing industry. And you'll even hear a story of an 11-year-old fly fishing prodigy.
Chris, I don't know where you want to go from here. A bunch of times I've stopped myself from talking about the local politics of muskie fishing because I think you wanted to save that maybe for a greater discussion.
Not save it. I think it's just one of the key points we wanted to talk about because that was a real meat of our last podcast, some of the challenges. And now that when I was asking you earlier about the general locations of fish, it all came back to me about that dam, and there was the culling of the fish at the dam. And, you know, I think you mentioned that is stopped now, but there's still some challenges. But you've had some major wins, and you kind of just, you know, you have some things you're still dealing with, but there has been some progress on your end dealing with the government and the fishing community.
Absolutely. So, I mean, for anyone out there that doesn't know, we still are in our regulation book. We still have a limit of 5 muskies per day. They're still not considered a sport fish in New Brunswick, and there's no season for them. We're working hard to change that. I've been involved in plenty of studies with University of New Brunswick, with Canadian River Institutes, and working directly with DNR and our Minister of Resources, Mike Holland. We're very lucky to have him in there. He's very receptive to this stuff. But at the same time, there's a lot of stakeholders on the river. You know, you really got to be patient with this stuff. So we're very lucky that Mactaquac Dam, their biodiversity facility, as they call it, or DFOs at the Mactaquac Dam and actually at our other dams as well, was under new management. And the new manager of those facilities decided that no fish should be killed. So this is a huge, huge win for us. We were hearing numbers of up to 60 muskies per year. You know, some years 40, 30, we're at the low end. But those muskies are basically now just sent back to swim away, which is just fantastic news. Obviously, those kind of numbers can eventually start hurting the population. I guess the other stuff we're dealing with is just trying to get through to DNR and get those numbers changed and get a season in place for these fish, get them recognized as a sport fish. I think we're really on the right trail. Tourism has certainly taken notice. Every year we're seeing media coverage of this river. Fishing Canada's been out. New Fly Fisher's been out. A group from Quebec's been out twice. Adventure Chasse Pêche. You know, they're really taking note and working with me and my guide service to promote this fishery. So I'm very vocal with them, knowing that they have kind of that foot in the door to change regulations. You know, tourism is part of government. They obviously rub shoulders with the right people. My big ask is that, you know, we're exploiting these fish. It's what we're doing. We're putting more pressure on them. With that comes more mortality. We're extremely lucky in New Brunswick, I'll say, and I'll take this opportunity to thank every angler in New Brunswick, in the muskie community. I mentioned there's no season. So obviously everyone is chomping at the bit to get out there in late May and June. My inbox will be absolutely full from other anglers. And we're all talking amongst ourselves. Have you seen them paired up yet? Have you seen them spawn? Very, very few people are going out there pre-spawn to target these fish. You know, anglers are the stewards of the river. And we've all gotten here. We have this population of muskies because, you know, of how great the angling community in New Brunswick is, and people are looking out for our fish and educating each other. So I mean, it is pretty incredible to see, because I know if you open muskies, said you could fish muskies anytime in Ontario, I'm there's just too many people and too much water to watch. And, you know, there'd be guys out there on the beds, and we need that spawn to keep this, to keep this thing going.
Well, you mentioned Fishing Canada TV show. I'm no producer for the Fishing Canada TV show, but if I was, Dean, I think Marlon's a great person to approach, just because you are so dialed into all these species. It would make for a heck of a time. But I wonder, like Chris said, like all these new people asking you about all these new people going there, and they must see the commercial opportunities, and like, why wouldn't they just take cues from Ontario? We had John Gillespie on last episode, and John just went off about how great a job that Ontario's been doing with its regulations and protecting the fisheries, but in a positive and constructive way that has allowed businesses to flourish and populations to flourish at the same time. Like, New Brunswick is a different fishery, but it's not that different. I mean, look at the Niagara River. This is a world-class fishery for so many different species. There's a lot of places around Ontario that can say the same. And so why don't they just look at cues from us? It's not like I don't understand why it's so – like, I get that bureaucracy is slow, change is slow. There's a lot of stakeholders on the river, like you said. But why can't they just look at Ontario and say, Ontario fisheries are thriving right now, and this is what they're doing?
I keep pushing them that direction. I think part of it is, you know, this is all new, relatively new, musky, smallmouth. I think we're just getting to the point where it's being accepted as part of what we have in New Brunswick, and people are realizing this is the future, right? This is a place where we have multi-species, and I think more and more people are just starting to embrace what we have. I always use the example. I always tell people 10 years ago when I was filling up the boat and people would see the big reels and the big baits in the boat, they knew I was going for muskie, and I would get the comments from the older fellas, I hope you kill every one of them, right? because of how great Muskies Canada and our angling community here has been, I can understand the bitterness. If all of a sudden your muskie population was decimated and, you know, this new fish came in, say it's snakeheads, whatever, you probably wouldn't be too happy about it, right? So it's taken years of taking the humble approach, taking the high road, educating people. Now when I stop at those gas stations, those old guys recognize, like, first of all, I think they recognize how hard that muskie fishermen grind. They see us out there, you know, at the gas station at 4 a.m. and again at 11 o'clock at night, and they see us going out there day in, day out. I think they're seeing the tourism and the economic value these fish have. So they're more accepted than ever. Now those old guys are like, you know, what's your biggest one this year? And are you getting lots of clients? And, you know, it's very much more accepted. So at a government level, that acceptance takes even longer. I think we're getting there, but I think those people in government are from such a different world. For years, they've been busy dealing with the decline of Atlantic salmon, with salmon lodges, with moose, bear, trout, all that stuff. I don't think their eyes have fully been open to what Ontario is doing. So I'm very lucky where I'm in this position where I can kind of guide them to that and show them that and use Ontario as an example, because you're absolutely right. You guys do, you know, they do an incredible job in that province of balancing what's good for the guides, what's good for tourism, and what's good for conservation and the fish to keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I think that
ironically,
go ahead,
Frank. Ironically, Chris, sorry to cut you off, but ironically, I'm about 8 hours from leaving for an ice fishing trip on Nipissing, where the slot size is so ridiculous you never get an eater. And if you do, they're few and far between. But that's another talk for another time. Chris, sorry, go ahead.
No, I think I remember last conversation, the I think the salmon fishing industry was one of the major challenges, in that they were really concerned or putting pressure on you that the muskie they were arguing were eating the salmon, correct? That was just scientifically not true.
That was the argument for years. I think we've disproven that at this point. Yeah. I think there's been enough studies. There's been stomach content studies done. There's been isotope studies done. There is zero evidence that muskies are eating.
But is that still a battle that you're, or like, is that still something that you're working on? Like have relationships with them to try to solve that, or it's just, you've moved past that and you just let it lie.
I think we've kind of moved past that. I don't think we need to prove that any further. I think now the idea is to just get the right people behind this movement. It is a great time because to have this podcast is a good time to have this podcast and talk about what's going on here. I was just at the first inaugural AGM for a group called United Guides and Outfitters of New Brunswick. I was approached by the president of that group, and he said, like, I need you to be our muskie guy. You know about this fishery. It's certainly well recognized. What this fishery is worth. They see the value. I don't think they know enough about the fish and the fishery, and I'm glad they're coming to me to kind of help steer them in the right direction. My viewpoint is, you know, I could sit here and be frustrated that we've been trying for years and we've gotten nowhere. And again, we just have to continue to take that high road. I look at it now, though, is that instead of me and a Muskies Canada group whose viewpoints may be looked at as biased, if I have a group like United Guides and Outfitters of New Brunswick behind me, guys that own salmon lodges, guys that, you know, do moose, bear, trout trips, all that stuff, they see the value in this fishery, and they're going to back me when we bring this stuff to the ministry. So I don't expect results overnight, but I there's a lot of positive stuff happening out here. It's accepted. And I think people here realize the future of New Brunswick is to have this multi-species experience. Fish in Canada has been out here a number of times, and they do a striper trip. We've seen sturgeon trips on TV. We've still got Atlantic salmon. We've got brook trout. We've got muskies. I mean, you can catch all these fish in basically a 2-3 hour drive. That's the beauty. And I think people are really starting to open their eyes that we can have it all.
It's a process, Marlon, but it sounds like everything's going in the right direction. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I truly believe that. If you got to have faith, I guess. But if I'm not the one that breaks through, I like to think I'm the one that kind of inspired someone that'll break through eventually.
The last time I was with Pete Bowman, he was talking about their trip out there for stripers and the numbers, both in volume and in size, that he was telling me about. My jaw almost hit the floor. I couldn't believe
it. Yeah, you've got the Miramichi fishery at the top end of the province on the north end. It's nothing to go up there and catch 200-300 fish a day.
That's what he was saying. Yeah.
And they top out in that kind of 35-40 inch class. On the lower St. John, which is a totally different population, you're not going to hit those numbers, but you've got chances at 40, 50 pound striped bass, probably more like 3, 4, maybe 5 a day down there. So again, we've got it all here. We've got the numbers, size, and everything in between.
Yeah. 3, 4, 5 at that size. I mean, yeah. I think I'd rather.
They put a strain. They'll peel some drag on you. They're quite the fish.
Oh, anytime you hear bass, you think of just a great fight, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Really neat. So I don't know if we can help Marlon in if this show can help at all, other than maybe interviewing you, but if there's any way we can help with you guys with the process, just let us know. And before we move on, is there anything else that you want to discuss or bring up regarding sort of the politics of being a guide, being a muskie advocate down in that part of the country?
No, like I say, it's years of taking the humble approach, educating, and I continue to do that. I think more and more people are open to the idea and want to come out and experience this. I was blown away. Again, being at the trade show, they had a live auction and a dance at the end of the night. A musky trip. I donated, $400 value went for almost $2,000. I think $1,800. So no pressure for me to put them on a fish now, eh? But these are people that have only fished salmon and trout, and you know, to see that trip bid up like that was pretty incredible and humbling, and I think speaks volumes to where this fishery is headed and the acceptance in New Brunswick.
So given that, have you seen an emergence of new, you know, companies, guides, like tour, like fishing infrastructure in the area?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's something you're going to see everywhere. Just with the popularity of fishing, everybody wants to be a guide, and there's some great guys doing it. There's some guys that are kind of fly by night. That's part of what inspired me to start my new business, New Brunswick Fishing Guides.ca. I kind of got together with a group of guides that, you know, have been doing it for years, that we're all kind of on the same level. We're all setting the standard, I like to say, like setting the highest standard out here, ensuring that our customers are well taken care of and creating that network throughout the province. So, we've got guys that do striped bass on both the fisheries previously mentioned. We've got a guy that does Atlantic salmon, and then myself doing, sturgeon, muskie, smallmouth. So we cover the whole province. We're all inclusive. And I think that's the first time that's really happened in New Brunswick. I think a lot of people are getting behind that movement and seeing again that's the future.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah, I remember how impressed I was the first time we interviewed you. You took the same approach and, you know, just very understanding, and, you know, you knew it was going to take a while and kill them with kindness and all that sort of thing.
But back then, Frank, Marlon, you were guiding back then. So it's not like when you say, I mean, you're not just starting now. Like, I remember talking about you guiding back in the previous episode, or you were a licensed guide.
Yeah, absolutely. I started guiding probably 10 years ago. Okay. And it started as just kind of, you start taking friends and family out, and someone goes, "Hey, you're a pretty good guide. You should try this." And you kind of nod. Yeah, that was cool. I really enjoyed this. So I just threw my name out there on Facebook. I got my guide license and decided to see where it went. And, you know, it starts off with the odd weekend trip. And then all of a sudden you get guys booking, asking for dates that you can't fill. And you start wondering, could this turn into something else? We were talking before we were recording, and I'll just kind of go back on that and just, last year before last season started, I was ready to actually, I was at a point where I was going to stop really promoting the guide thing. I was going to take my regulars, balance it with work and a relationship, and, step back on the guiding. I had an opportunity where, my professional career got, the company I worked for got bought out. My position didn't exist anymore, and it didn't, I looked at Lindsay, my girlfriend, and she knew exactly what I was going to do. I was going to see how the full-time guiding thing went. So I didn't have time to focus on the business last year. That happened in late February, March. So I started my season fishing in mid-March, and it was just, that's one thing I learned is guiding full-time. You don't have time for much except for eat, sleep, and fish. Check some emails once in a while, and that's it. So this winter, I've really focused on the guiding or on the business end of the guide business, formed New Brunswick Fishing Guides.ca, more promotion. So this is great to be on here and kind of talk about this stuff with you guys. But it's been a huge success. I've never been so excited to get back on the water and start a new season after everything I learned my first season full-time guiding.
I think, too, for a guide on water like that, and Lake Erie, you're very lucky to have the bounty of the different species. So, like, there are a lot of muskie guides in certain pockets of the province here in Ontario that will guide for muskie during the season and then, not work for the rest of the year, do whatever they do, go to Florida or whatever that looks like. And that can be a tough grind, making a living like that. But if you have the skills and you have the fishery, man, you could just work almost all year round.
Just about. I mean, I don't do the ice thing. It's nice to have the break. So, I'm guiding muskies right into kind of start of September, December rather. Mm-hmm. I think I ran a few December trips this year, but that's a pretty short off season for me to get home and, you know, focus on renovations, start tying flies, get the gear kind of spruced up again and the boats fixed up and ready to go again. So the winters just fly by for me. You know, they really do. They're pretty short off season for me.
I remember talking to a few guides where the off season was like a mental break. It was like a mental reset. Yeah. It was really important to them too, to have that time where they could just reset mentally and focus for the new season and not be, like you said, guiding all the way through and not have that period where you could really, you know, have a reset.
I absolutely. Yeah. It's healthy for sure to take a break.
All right, cool. I have a question. I want to take this kind of in a different direction, if you don't mind, Chris. I want to talk about baits. Like we were talking about jigging before, and I'm sure some of the people that are listening, you know, you mentioned SJR. You mentioned you almost said Brunswick, and I know why you said that, because those two guys I think are two peas in a pod, right? I met them. I had the pleasure of meeting them at the Odyssey in Oshawa. They're really great guys. But you know, I really like the Brunswick baits, and I had a good long look, and I said I was going to buy one, and then I wasn't sure if it was like the baits out there are designed to penetrate deeper, right?
There's Jeremy makes a mix of baits. Okay. He does have shallower runners. His paint is just really coming along. Yeah. I actually had some old box riders with messed up paint jobs that I sent him. And he just, I had some personal special requests from him. I just got some pictures this morning, man. He is just knocking them out of the park. But no, he's expanded his range, and he's got, I think his new one's called the Johnny Jerk, and it's a shallower running bait. But you're absolutely right. I do love those baits that dig. I do love like my flat shads, things that can get down to 20, mm-hmm. 25 feet, or, you know, able to put them in the prop wash and get them down 10 feet really quick, right?
Yeah. So do you have like, do you use baits that are custom for that water that maybe we don't use out here, or do you modify them in a certain way that maybe we don't fish that way out here? Is it that niche for you, or am I overthinking this?
No, I mean, again, I don't want to get my baits down too much deeper than they go. You know, I'm very conscious of that potential for barotrauma. So, you know, we do use a lot of stuff that gets down pretty deep. Like I'd say for the most part, I'm favoring deeper running baits, but there's, you know, there's more than just that. I mean, there's the 20-foot flats, the 10-foot flats. I have a full box with all different kinds of stuff out there. I play with my lines a lot too. Meaning I'm a big believer in mono. I know a lot of guys, I think it's overlooked these days, but you know, you can take a mid-depth runner, put it on mono, and all of a sudden it's a shallow runner, right? Or vice versa with wire. That's another thing I play with. So on any given day, I've got a wire line, a braid line, and a mono line rod set up for trolling.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.
Hi, everybody. I'm Angelo Viola.
And I'm Pete Bowman.
Now, you might know us as the hosts of Canada's favorite fishing show, but now we're hosting a podcast.
That's right. Every Thursday, Ange and I will be right here in your ears, bringing you a brand new episode of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Now, what are we going to talk about for 2 hours every week?
Well, you know there's going to be a lot of fishing.
I knew exactly where those fish were going to be and how to catch them, and they were easy to catch.
Yeah, but it's not just a fishing show. We're going to be talking to people from all facets of the outdoors, from athletes.
All the other guys would go golfing. Me and Garth and Turk and all the Russians would go fishing.
To scientists.
But now that we're reforesting and letting things free, it's the perfect transmission environment for Lyme disease.
To chefs.
If any game isn't cooked properly, marinated, or you will taste it.
And whoever else will pick up the phone.
Wherever you are, Outdoor Journal Radio seeks to answer the questions and tell the stories of all those who enjoy being outside.
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
No matter what species you love to target, from boot to headlamp, Angling Sports has what you need. Their store is massive, and it's just loaded with equipment and apparel. So if you love to go after those big toothy critters like we do, it's a one-stop shop for all pike and musky tackle. Whether you're looking for trolling rods or casting reels, Angling Sports is always adding the latest and best industry offerings from entry level to higher end. Looking for custom musky baits? They got them. It's worth the drive to London, so check out their amazing store in person or online by visiting anglingsports.ca and net that PB in style.
So tell us why some of the very best anglers I know will always have a wire line in the boat. So can you tell us why you like it, what it does, what the difference is? Just for, I think a lot of the people listening might just be like, what the heck is that? I know that when I first saw a wire line, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, I was like, what the hell is that? And then, you know, that rod cleaned up in the boat. So can you talk a little bit about wire lines and what they do and give us a rundown
first
on that?
First of all, I think it was Mike Lazarus. I heard him say, if he had one rod, it would be wire. And if he had two rods, they would be wire. So I said, I need to get some wire. When you hear a guy like that talk about it. But what it does for you is it's going to get baits deeper. It's going to get baits deeper quicker. So, you know, it's just another tool in your spread. You know, if you're running multiple lines, you know, it puts baits in a place that braid or mono couldn't get you. The other thing it does is it's got an audible down there. Like it's making a lot of racket and noise. So I use it in different situations, different ways. I think it was one of the first times I ever ran it was like a super, super hot, flat, calm summer day, nothing going on. I figured there's no way we're catching a fish today. I was actually with my girlfriend and we were going to the pub. So I said, I'm going to crank it up to like six, seven miles an hour and just get to the pub and we'll, you know, go have lunch or whatever. I really didn't think anything was going to happen. And I put a jointed hose fatty out there like 80 feet back. So, I mean, it's making a lot of noise with this wire. We had three fish in about 20 minutes and they were hitting it like they were upset at it. Like they were hitting it like they were mad at it, just cranking it. So that's, you know, I think it makes a lot of noise and I think some days they want that. I'm also a believer, and I'm sure you've heard guides or anglers tell you that there's days where it could be a hindrance as well, where you don't want it in your spread.
What's the negative on that?
Could be too much noise for whatever reason. It's something that's bugging them that day and they're not going to hit it. They don't want to swim past it to get to another bait. I'm always very aware of what else is in my spread, not just the bait that's getting hit. You know, I've heard so many people talk about that. Guys running like 13-inch believers above their spread and, you know, they're telling their buddy what they're getting the fish on. But their buddy's not getting any fish because he doesn't have that big noisemaker in the middle, right? So I'm always thinking about what else is in the spread, what may have piqued that fish's interest, and then what it bit.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you got to remember that you're putting out this footprint behind the boat. of, you know, fish swimming that aren't really that far away from each other.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. It's like, is it an all or nothing preposition in terms of like, if it is the wrong time to run something like that, is that going to interfere with the other lines that you have out? Is it that disruptive?
Yeah, we'll never know for sure because right. You know, we can't talk to the fish. But
yeah.
A lot of times if I'm getting bit with a certain spread out there, I've had my guests say, well, why don't we put three of those or two of those out there? And I'll say, because it might be that other bait that's not getting bit that's bringing them in, right?
Yeah, yeah. And pro tip to the listeners, you got to leave the clicker on when you're bringing that line in. When you're bringing that bait in on that metal line, you got to leave the clicker on, right? That's,
yeah, absolutely. You need a special setup to run your wire. Yeah. You need I run.
Oh, sorry, not when you're bringing it in. When you're letting it out,
I pretty much always. I've even glued the clickers on some of my wire reels so clients don't turn it off or backlash it. If you get a wire's not cheap. I run 50-pound Mon-El. You also need what they call, I think it's a Twilly tip or a Tilly tip. So it basically looks like a doorstop, those spring doorstops on the end of your rod. You don't want your wire to bend at a 90 and get a kink in it. And always watch that because I'm not too proud to admit that I've screwed up and almost lost some very expensive baits by not staying on top of it and you know watching that wire's not getting kinked. Cause it'll just, your bait will just snap off as you're trolling, like without getting bit or hitting anything. So you always want to be kind of cutting back that first 5 to 6 feet of your wire. Or if you're getting snagged, watch it. You just kind of got to really, really baby that stuff.
In the same way in the braid, you're always running your fingers to see if there's a little nick.
That's right.
A little nick that you got, right. You can't leave that nick on there. You got to cut back.
Yeah, I felt so bad. I was fishing with Matt O'Brien this fall, and I took the clicker off. I'm so used to taking the clicker off, man. I think I
know they're big believers in wire. If you watch close on the Slobland flicks, you'll notice the wire lines going.
So speaking of a guy like Matt or even Ontario, have you fished much in Ontario? Do you have a place? Do you have a favorite place? Do you have a place you still want to get to or a person you want to fish with?
Man, I would love to my dream is to set up a tour one month and hit all these great waters. I don't know if I'll be able to do it all. There's a special place in my heart for the French. It's been a while since I've got to go fish Ontario for muskies, but the French will always be on that list. The last time I went, I spent 3 days with my father and, best fishing trip of my life. I don't know how big the fish was. I know it was 50 plus. The boat we rented was so small. It was like a 14 foot with an 8 horse. We spent 2 days, had a couple follows. It was pretty dead fishing in August. And the last morning, I remember Dad saying, you know, we're going to have to leave because I can't handle this sun anymore. And right as kind of the sun crested over the trees, I hit a fish that I measured it in the water with a loose tape and I saw it go from like 50 to 54. It was in that range somewhere. Just a dream come true. And then we smoked two more fish in the next 20 minutes, low 40s fish and called it a day. So I grew up there fishing bass, fishing walleye and pike. And it was a dream come true to go back and target muskies on that water.
Yeah, it's literally my favorite place in the world. I love
it. Pretty bad scenery there.
Yeah. So I've also said I've got two jet boats now, and I'd love to bring one of those down. I don't know why more people don't run jets on the French. People always talk about the lower that, it's uncharted, and I think that keeps a lot of people off of that water. Sounds to me like the upper French is getting more pressure every year. So I'd love to get down, in that delta that runs into Georgian Bay with a jet boat and do some exploring.
Growing up, I used to hate the jet boats on the Niagara because they would be just massive boats. They would come in, and I'm fishing on the shore. And every time they pass, they do like 360s and whatever. Oh, everybody's screaming, right?
Yeah.
And then the waves come and just smash all the rocks. And you got to go up at least 4 or 5 feet or else you're going to be soaked.
Yeah, but those are different jet boats. Yeah, I'm talking like outboard jet. That, you know, it doesn't look much different than a prop, but it's you know, that motor, that jet unit is actually higher than the bottom of your boat, so you can run through 6 inches of water and not worry.
The draft is cool. Yeah, like 6 inches. Yeah, that's
yeah good. Yeah, it's wild.
Well, it sounds like they'd be really good too, because you always want to be running to the mouth of the Nipissing too. If you've got the right wind conditions, you can get out there and target some massive.
How are they for holding steady?
The jet boats.
Yeah, if you want lock, like you can put on your trolling motor on these. Like,
You put I run my jet. I've got one on a 14-foot John boat, and I've got another one on a smoker craft Alaskan. So it's actually like a mod V. With kind of a V at the front, and then it's all flat bottom. So they cavitate a bit. That's the only thing, because that intake is higher, just higher, like a quarter inch higher than the bottom of your boat. If you're rocking and hitting waves, they'll start sucking air. So they're not really made for open water. You'll see guys in Alaska that'll good enough, and they do it enough where they'll change from a jet unit to a prop. Like they'll hit those coastal bays and whatnot, and they've got the prop on to get through there, the steelheader guys, and then they'll switch to a jet unit right on the side of the river
on the fly.
Yeah you can. It's just like taking your lower unit off. It's just a drive shaft that runs up to the top of the motor.
Frank, we don't see many on the Niagara. I haven't. Maybe you have.
No, I don't. I mean, look, I fish the upper.
The lower, it's all they're all tourist jet boats.
Yeah. But Chris, I think we see a lot of the same boats up there, eh? So I don't, other than the big cigar boats that are obviously, you know, something different, which are so stupid when people put those on the Niagara. I swear I want to punch them. They're huge and they're so loud, and it's such a narrow river. It's just like.
But
what's that? Yeah. We've got the a lot of those on the lower St. John River.
No, but Marlon, the issue we have in the Niagara is that they're like where we launch, there's one dock, and they take like 45 minutes to load something like that, right? Okay. They got like this massive trailer, and you know, lining up a 40, what is it, Frank? 30-foot boats, but they just take forever.
I think we've all got boat launch stories, especially since COVID and kind of the increase in boat traffic out there. Oh,
I don't get it on the small rivers. Like you just go up and down, up and down, up and down. It's like, just wear a t-shirt that says I have a small penis. Like just do that. And everyone will know, and you don't have to ruin everybody's time on the water. Oh shit. They drive me nuts. Bucket list or a place you haven't fished in Canada or the US, something that's kind of on your radar for a special trip?
I mean, the St. Lawrence is up there. There's no,
you've never been, Marlon?
I've never been. No, I was going to go last year, and I just got so busy guiding. I just couldn't, it's hard. You got to make hay when the sun shines, right?
Yeah.
This is your full-time gig. So I just couldn't make it, but it's on my list. I kind of want the needle in a haystack. I'd love to fish the big water, with a fly rod and really, you know, push the limits of what can be done, I guess, with fly fishing for muskies. I know it's been tried. I know some guys are starting to have some success out there. Couple of them with my flies actually, which is really cool. I've gotten some messages from guys that, either got a fly from me or saw one of my step-by-step videos online and tied like my version of a muskie fly and came back and said, look at what I caught on the St. Lawrence, some 50 plus fish, which is super cool. But I'd love to, you know, try and get those big monsters that are getting up shallow at certain times of the year and target them with a fly rod, something they never seen anyway. It'd be quite the story to tell. So that's on my list. The shield fisheries, I mean, that's again, growing up on the French, it's just, it's in my heart. It's in my blood to fish that water. I'd love to get up to Sull. I've drooled over the pictures and the stories from your guys' trips up that way. Just some super, super cool water up there.
It's a pretty special place, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, geez, what was I going to say?
You're so close to the St. Lawrence, too. I mean, relatively, if you look at
it. Yeah, it's really, yeah, me and Ben Thornton were talking about it the other day, that it's like, why don't we do this more often? It's like, it's really 6-7 hours away for us. That's it. It's really not that bad. But again, when you're guiding it's hard to put that block on the schedule or say no when you're getting the phone calls. So
yeah, but you might be able to swing it, because like we talked about the inverse feeding windows for when the forage is migrating, and like the Larry for me anyways, like I fish it here and there all year, but the Larry in late season. Yeah. Is awesome. So, I mean, if you're, you know, maybe, you know, maybe you always have bookings, but maybe
our fish don't stop eating. That's for sure. We're still seeing, you know, there, aside from those ocean run fish, the sheer volume of biomass, like of bait fish on the St. John, whether it's those ocean run fish or not, brown bullhead, white perch, yellow perch, white suckers, it you know, those fish carry those girths and peg out right to the end. They still put on that winter weight, and we're catching some real nice fish right into right into ice up, right? But you're absolutely right. I've thought many times that kind of once my season peters off and that December bite kind of keeps going, sometimes even into January on the St. Lawrence from what I see. So that could be something in the cards for upcoming seasons as well.
See, if you have brown bullhead and you have white perch and you have suckers, like there's no way these muskie are crushing salmon or striper like that, right?
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous to even
think
that that opinion came from just not being educated, just people that saw a big mean looking fish that got huge and with all these teeth, and my goodness, they're gonna decimate. I get that all the time from people that don't know about muskie and are inexperienced, that show up, and when I explain to them these fish might eat once every 2 days, 3 days, they're like, oh. Like the look on their face sometimes just completely changes their opinion of the species, right? They just, and again, that's why we've taken the high road. That's why we're here to just educate people.
That's the key, education, because it's not rocket science. When you look at the story of the muskie is the fish of 10,000 casts. Why? Because it never eats.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And like, they're not active swimmers. They're fish that, you know, migratory, that you get some of them that are migratory, but that's not what I mean. They don't spend their days, they're not sharks. They don't spend their days cruising around looking for something to eat. They're ambush predators. They sit still. They're always going to take an easy feeding, easy digesting bottom fish over something they have to chase, or something with tons of spines that they don't want to risk choking on. It all really makes sense when you understand the fish, but I guess it's easy for guys like us to say, right?
Exactly. The other thing too, that may have people's perception skewed here is, in the early 1900s, they stocked a lot of chain pickerel, which have really, taken over certain places. So if anyone doesn't know, a chain pickerel is like also referred to as a grass pike. Yeah. They're part of the Esox family. So they're cousins to muskies and northern pike. They get to, tops 30 inches. Most of them are in that like 15 to 20 inch range, and they do not stop eating. Those things eat everything they see all year round. They're just voracious, and they have had a pretty negative effect on a lot of the native species here and really taken over some systems. So that's another kind of, I think probably another reason people here are predisposed to thinking, muskies act the same. They look the same. They're just bigger. They eat everything they see. So again, just education is key.
Yeah. Fair enough. That makes sense. So, okay, Chris, I think we're coming to the end of another great session with Marlon. Do you have anything else for Marlon before we ask him? And I forgot to give him a heads up. So this is the heads up for a fish story that he wants to share. He shared a great one the first time around, but you know what? There's been a lot of distance between then and now. So I'm sure he's got another
cool story he wants to share with us, I hope. Chris, anything else before we get there?
Yeah, yeah. Before we get on that, just on the topic, like, are you – is there anything you're doing, like, in connection with the community to raise that public awareness? Like, are you having events or, you know, trying your best to engage the public in educating them just on that topic as we were discussing?
I think right now the two biggest things I'm doing is the formation of New Brunswick Fishing Guides, making the website newbrunswickfishingguides.ca. It's a group of forward thinking anglers that have been, you know, legitimate guides that to me are setting the standard for the guiding industry in New Brunswick. Mm-hmm. The fact that we are multi-species and open to, you know, providing trips for all species of fish in New Brunswick. It's no longer us versus them. That's kind of been the attitude out here. You're a musky guy. You're a salmon guy. No, I'm just a fisherman, right? And that's really what this group of anglers is. I got a lot of comments at the trade show over the weekend that, you know, we had a big banner over our booth, and there's one of the guides holding a beautiful Atlantic salmon. There's one of my clients holding a big muskie, and another guy with the striper. Someone said that's probably the first time he's seen any bit of promotional material with all those species on it, right? So I think opening the public's eye and pushing towards that future that we have everything here and we can all get along and all and see conservation across the board. And then that group, that business partnering with the United Guides and Outfitters of New Brunswick, who's, you know, got that roadmap to success built with tourism and built with connections to DNR and our ministry to accept all species and make change. So that's really the push right now, which I think is just fantastic out here. We got a lot of great guys out there involved in that United Guides program as well.
Is that first one, is the website constructed yet?
Yeah, it's up and running. You can go on. It's easy to remember, newbrunswickfishingguides.ca. You know, there's a guide bio for all of us and then outlines of all the different trips we offer from across the province.
So would that, it'd be fair to say that's a good starting point for people who are like coming to New Brunswick or want to just kind of like get an intro into what they can fish for there or how to start the process. That's a good starting point.
That is the starting point. Go. That's exactly why I built the site. There's even a map on there that like an interactive map where you can click on different flags and it shows you what species are where in the province. So if you were to plan your trip out here, we've got you covered for no matter what you want to do.
Cool.
That's awesome.
That's a great.
Any other? Sorry, Chris.
No, that's great. I'm glad we got that out so people can hop online and check it out. If they're interested.
I was going to ask Marlon, is there any other online or social media assets you'd like to promote before we get to the fish story?
I mean, you can just Facebook me. That's where I probably share most of my stuff and most updates come on my Facebook page. Just Marlon Prince. I'm St. John Esox on Instagram. I'm heavier on the Facebook stuff, but I do usually share things there as well. So those are probably the two social spots you can find me.
Cool. All right. Okay, Marlon, why don't you, I hope in this 2-minute window since I mentioned it, sorry, I usually, when I talk to people, when we set the show up, I always...
Yeah, but he's been listening long enough. He knows. Yeah,
you know what? I totally forgot it was coming, but I'll share the one that first came to mind, one of the most memorable moments for me last year, and it actually started the year before. So... I was actually out on the water guiding someone that booked like a half day trip. And we were fishing the morning, into mid afternoon. We hit a bite window. I think we had three fish in the boat at that point. And I got a call from, a woman. I was probably guiding an hour and a half away from the Fredericton area. She says, my husband and son would love to come out with you. Do you have availability? I said, no, I'm booked tomorrow. I said, the best I could do would be like a 4-hour evening trip. So, she mentioned her husband wanted to come and their son who was 10 years old. And she asked if he could bring his new fly rod. And I said, for muskies? Yeah, for muskies. I said, sure, tell him to bring it, but this is kind of trolling water we're on and it's kind of a trolling bite. So if he wants to try it out. And when you hear You know, when you hear a mom ask if her 10-year-old can bring a musky fly rod, you're kind of like, yeah, sure, whatever. You know, like we'll let them throw it around a little bit and see what happens. I know a lot of grown men who can't throw a musky fly all day long. It's not an easy thing to do. Most people will tell you it's one of the hardest things to do in angling, period. Guys that have been all over the world and fished tarpon and bonefish and permit or sailfish. So anyway, they get out and we didn't get a fish that night. We did some jigging. I think we had a kit jigging and tried some trolling, and he wanted to try this fly rod. And I was like, sure. So I pull up to a likely weed bed that I've had some success on before. This kid hit the bow of the boat and I was like blown away. Most adult anglers I have in my boat could not throw a fly or bring it back in like this kid. He had clearly done his homework. He was figure eighting like perfectly deep, you know, bringing it deep at the boat and hanging it on the corners. And I'm like, you've watched some videos, eh? He goes, yeah, I've watched all the videos.
So, Marlon, you said he's 10?
Yeah, he's 10 years old.
Jeez.
Yeah, he's a prodigy. He's Jack. He's from Cape Breton. He showed me his Facebook while he was on the boat. And I mean, this kid's caught 40-inch Atlantic salmon, 30-inch brown trout, striped bass, like you name it, right? And he ties his own flies and everything. So I said, like, you need to come back next year. And I want you on my boat on like good musky water, like where you've got a chance. I said, because if they're on, it's not a question of if, it's just how long it's going to take to find the right fish. You're going to trigger them, right?
Yeah.
So he did. He booked 2 days this year. And I think like halfway through the first day, this is if you go on my Facebook and look through the reels, you can see the reels titled, like the caption says he watched all the videos, and you can see this kid throw the fly rod. He connected with like a 40-inch fish, which is on the fly. And at that age, like kind of the perfect, like it's just big enough to be really proud and really impressive. But you don't want to be one of those guys that goes out and starts with a 50, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, he sets the hook on this thing. And as he's fighting it, you can hear me say, I got to go head first. And he reminds me that I've watched all the videos. Don't worry, I know. And he's just like cool hand Luke playing this fish right into the net. Definitely one of the most memorable moments. And like I say, the fact that the whole story kind of started the year before is pretty amazing.
That is amazing. Awesome. I love seeing kids with that type of passion and that type of focus at that age. That's incredible.
Yeah, exactly. He knew he just kept swinging it, just kept getting that fly out there and doing it right. And I just kept telling him, like, it's a matter of time, buddy. You're going to connect. You're going to find that fish. Just keep doing what you're doing. And he knew the drill, which was amazing. So, again, I think he's 11 years old. To see that go down was really something special.
So Frank, I'm thinking like Full Moon Friday, we get a call in with this kid and just have him walk us through the 10-year-old or the 11-year-old fly fishing prodigy. Are you down with that?
Could you put us in touch with him, Marlon?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'd love to.
Oh, Chris, that's a great idea, man. That is a great idea. So I'm totally down for that. Let's just like try and do it for the next one.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, fly fishing is so difficult. And as Marlon mentioned, I mean, I've never fly fished for muskie. I fly fish for a lot of other species. And you said there's like an exponential jump there to muskie fishing. So if you're 11 and you're fishing at that level and catching a muskie and just following the rules and just like just very relaxed and put it in the net, just like nonchalant at that age, you know, hats off to him. And hats off to you to you know, just guiding him to that. That's very special as a guide.
No, very, very, absolutely. Thanks for letting me share the story.
Right on. Yeah. Marlon, introduce us over email if you can, and we'll get the little guy to call in and we'll do.
I'm sure he'd get a kick out of that, man. It'd be awesome.
Yeah. Sounds great. Like a great follow up to this episode, Chris. Awesome idea. Really cool. All right, gents. I think we're good here. Chris, are you good?
Yeah, Marlon, if you don't mind, send me a couple pics so I can do some artwork for these. Probably we'll split this into two episodes. So if you have any new pics you want me to post as the cover art, just send it over to me and I'll get it up.
Will do. And I'll get you in touch with Jack. I think that's awesome. Thank you so much, guys. And again, congratulations on all your success. Again, you guys have taken it to the next level, and I'm sure there's lots more to come in the future. So congrats.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
All right, listeners, please, pretty please, we're begging you, head over to iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts and rate the show. Tell everybody what you think. Leave a review. We would really appreciate it. Helps us here at the Ugly Pike Podcast on the Outdoor Journal Radio Podcast Network. Also, if you're a business, big or small, bait maker, line maker, giant company, we have sponsorship packages for everyone. We touch the multi-species fishing community through the Fishing Canada TV show and are, as always, totally dialed in with the muskie audience. So it's a great investment allocation of your dollars. Hit us up on social media or through the website and we'll get you our deck. Until next time, thanks for listening, everybody.
Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.
Hi, everybody. I'm Angelo Viola.
And I'm Pete Bowman.
Now, you might know us as the hosts of Canada's favorite fishing show, but now we're hosting a podcast.
That's right. Every Thursday, Ange and I will be right here in your ears, bringing you a brand new episode of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Now, what are we going to talk about for 2 hours every week?
Well, you know there's going to be a lot of fishing.
I knew exactly where those fish were going to be and how to catch them, and they were easy to catch.
Yeah, but it's not just a fishing show. We're going to be talking to people from all facets of the outdoors, from athletes.
All the other guys would go golfing. Me and Garth and Turk and all the Russians would go fishing.
To scientists.
But now that we're reforesting and letting things free, it's the perfect transmission environment for Lyme disease.
To chefs.
If any game isn't cooked properly, marinated, or you will taste it.
And whoever else will pick up the phone.
Wherever you are, Outdoor Journal Radio seeks to answer the questions and tell the stories of all those who enjoy being outside.
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
No matter what species you love to target, from boot to headlamp, Angling Sports has what you need. Their store is massive, and it's just loaded with equipment and apparel. So if you love to go after those big toothy critters like we do, it's a one-stop shop for all pike and muskie tackle. Whether you're looking for trolling rods or casting reels, Angling Sports is always adding the latest and best industry offerings from entry level to higher end. Looking for custom musky baits? They got them. It's worth the drive to London, so check out their amazing store in person or online by visiting anglingsports.ca and net that PB in style. Do you know the name of Canada's one and only specialized pike and muskie shop? It's Izoco, and it's an Esox angler's paradise, offering the very best in hand-picked, top-quality gear, from bait casting to fly fishing, and even specialized Scandinavian tackle. Izoco's staff will provide expert advice and top-quality service. But Izoco is more than just a store. It's a community of passionate anglers that make up the Izoco tribe, and they're always ready to share tips, swap stories. So head over to their shop in person or online at izocofishing.com and let Izoco turn those fishing trips into epic stories.